talk about this thing that's in my brain. It keeps me from wanting to go on, but I want some gain. Maybe a little.
We are recording. Everybody, welcome back to the We the Patriots podcast. I am your host, Sal Asante, and with me today, it looks like I have a buffering John McLernan, so hopefully I'll let him catch up soon.
I'm hearing you loud and clear on my side, so...
Now you look perfect. Yeah.
Oh, you good.
Perfect. So...
I did my makeup today, so...
Yeah, I think it was great. It was stuck on a still with you smiling, so we have no problem at all. How's everything going today, John? You are in a great mood, it seems. I'm feeling good.
Yeah. I'm in a great place. I think like business is where I want it to be. Family is awesome. Is where I want it to be. It's summertime here. I think one of the things that really helps me in a good mood is this idea of living in the present moment, because there's a lot of crappy things happening in the world that could be really, really distressing. But like, you know, I had breakfast with my little boy this morning and he started dancing to Fruit Salad, the song by the Wiggles, and just entertaining himself and making him laugh his head off. Like, a giggling toddler is the best thing in the world. I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy this moment and not let my mind be preoccupied with, you know, all the difficult stuff that's happening in the world. And that does a lot for your mood and mental health, you know?
Definitely. I mean, without a doubt. And it's one of the things that I really look forward to in being a father is just that experience and connection with my kids, especially my son. I hope to God that I have a son, because
It is. So one of the best things is, you know, my son's 2 at the time of recording this, and helping him to understand what healthy masculinity looks like and how to appropriately begin to like use his strength and ability. I mean, obviously still he's just a toddler, but right. So we do things like I'll play wrestle with him. You know, we'll chuck him around. He calls it flying when I scoop him up and throw him onto a stack of pillows and things. Yep. And then he loves it. So now he's trying to take flying leaps off of things. I do have to like occasionally intervene so he doesn't, you know, do a face plant onto a hardwood floor, but teaching him what controlled strength looks like, because obviously I'm significantly stronger than he is and I could very easily overpower him, but I show him this sort of play dynamic where we get to explore our sort of aggressive masculinity in a playful way that doesn't hurt each other. And so I think it's really cool to socialize him in that way.
I love that. And is there any other way that you find, like, how is his communication with you at this point? That's what I'm curious of.
He's a sharp kid. And I'm not just biased because he's my kid. I am biased because he's my kid. And I think he's the cutest kid in the world. And I love him to bits. But a lot of people remark like how switched on and present he is as a kid. Yeah. He comes out with stuff that just blows our mind. Like one day, you know, a couple months back, I opened the microwave and he goes, "There's nothing in there." I've never explained to him the concept of nothing. Mm-hmm. Where did he come up with this idea because we just take it for granted that we know what this means. How did he recognize, looking at the microwave and not seeing anything in there, that there's nothing, you know, where did, you know, so stuff like that just kind of like boggles my mind. But the flip side of it, the other thing I do, I probably tell him I love him at least 100 times a day. Mm-hmm. Kiss him on the forehead or the head all the time, give him hugs, cuddles, snuggles, that kind of stuff, because I also want him to know what healthy affection looks like as well, and that it's you know, it's okay to show love as well. So really kind of showing him both sides so he grows up in this healthy emotional environment where he doesn't feel the need to, like, the emotions are bad, but learns how to regulate them and work within them. So modeling behavior is super important.
Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't imagine that that's playing a tiny role at all, because, you know, looking back on all of our childhoods, I think we all wish that we were told that a little bit more.
Yeah. You know, my work revolves a lot around psychology, behavioral psychology and neuroscience and right. how the brain works. And so I look at, like, so I'm 41, my kid, he was born at 39. I'm an old dad in a sense. Most people's kids are happening in their like 20s, early 30s, that kind of stuff. I would not have made a good father at that stage in time in my life. And right now I have the benefit of this level of like perspective and understanding and emotional maturity that allows me to explore my relationship with him in a different way. Had I been 10 years younger, I probably would have tried to like control his tantrums. I would have been angered by his emotions and things like that. And right. So I think he's really fortunate that he gets this version of me than the version that I used to be 10 or 15 years ago.
Exactly. Oh, I could not agree more. And so you got I know you mentioned that you have another one on the way. How is the world holding up during all this?
It's at the tough stage. We're about 10 weeks out from when the baby's going to be born. A lot of people look at her and think, oh, you must be due any day. And she's like, it's 10 weeks to go. Yeah. For some reason, she, you know, pregnancy is such a fascinating thing. And I try to drop all preconceived ideas about what it's supposed to look like. I have, like, my respect for mothers and motherhood and womanhood, like, has gone up infinitely watching my wife go through pregnancy. It is the most, like, when we stop and think about it, like, she's literally growing another human inside her belly. Right. You know, it's like, you know, and we talk to them, we call them Peanut. I say them because we're going to leave it as a surprise, but whatever they are, they're going to be that. We're not going down that road, you know?
Yeah, I was afraid, but, I was afraid there, but I'm like, that's not John.
No. That might be a topic that we explore a little bit, but, you know, sure. Watching them, like, move around, being able to, like, is that a foot? Is that, like, a hand? Like, look at them kick and things like that. Like, it's right. Pretty, like, impressive to see. And then, you know, I talked to Peanut, and, you know, my other son, he's aware that there's a baby in mommy's tummy. And so we have him, like, talk to Peanut as well, and just acclimatize him to the idea that it's still going to be a shock for him, but there's going to be another human being joining the family. But right. So what's really challenging from my wife's perspective, of course, is that we've got a busy toddler. I work full time. She's just gone on mat leave, but she's seven and a half months pregnant with a 2-year-old. Like, wow. You know, and, like, my dad comes over once a week to help, but he's 72, right? And he's pretty good for a 72-year-old. My mom, she's not so able. Just not, mobility is not great. She has to use a walker. She's 74 going on 75. And so we're doing a lot of this on our own. So I have to try to be very conscious of the need to show up and give her breaks. And I can do that because I work from home, but to give her breaks during the day, because it's exhausting being 7.5 months pregnant and having a toddler. Now, thankfully, our little boy is, like, he can play pretty well independently, and we're really lucky in that regard.
Mm. I can imagine. Yeah. Because that's at that age where if you don't keep them entertained, that they're going to find their entertainment some way, somehow.
Yeah. The only thing I try to watch out for is him climbing on things to potentially fall down the railing that, like, overlooks the stairs. Like, we have railings and gates, but, you know, kids, they surprise you with what they figure out how to do. And like, there's videos of, like, kids climbing out of cribs and things like that. That's the one thing, admittedly, that terrifies me. Like, we try to make it inaccessible, but he is so, like, clever that he somehow is aware without us. We try not to draw attention to things that are, like, really risky or dangerous, because from a child's brain, if this draws mom and dad's attention, this is something that I want to do more of because I really enjoy mom and dad's attention.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, when he misbehaves, for example, I react in a very minimal way. Like, I might hold him and I might help him regulate and things like that, but not make a big deal out of it, because otherwise that conditions his brain to think that behavior is a way to get more attention. But it definitely terrifies me, the thought that he could climb over the railing and fall down the stairs, admittedly.
Absolutely. Definitely. And how is your treatment with, this is the last thing I would want to ask on your kids, not to make it the whole show, but
no, clearly I love being a dad though, man. It's like the best.
I know, it's so fun to talk about though. But what is your philosophy, you and your wife's philosophy, on screens and the children?
Minimal access. So he's aware they exist. We have family overseas. So my brother lives in Turkey. My sister-in-law, my wife's sister, lives in Switzerland. Her family lives in Australia. I have family in New Zealand. So we have family across the Atlantic and across the Pacific. So obviously technology facilitates that. He's aware that we take photos and videos, but the only time he really watched a show was when we were flying between Canada and Australia. He got to watch some Paw Patrol. But the funny thing is, he wasn't super interested. He's like, give me my truck back. I want to play with that. So we thought, okay, we'll try and use the screen to distract him, because it's a 15-hour flight between Sydney and Vancouver. Yep. And he was like, nah, whatever. So in the mornings, he'll grab my wife's phone, and he, like, sneaks out, because he's got a crib right beside her bed with one side open, so he can climb up into her bed if he wants to. But he like sneaks out really quietly in the morning, slips out the door, like, grabs her phone, and he has figured out how to turn music on. So we give him a Bluetooth speaker so he can listen to music. It's got, like, flashing lights and things, but I'm so keenly aware of how screen time can affect a developing brain that there's no games, there's no movies and things like that. And it sounds like I'm being strict or harsh, but, like, look at any, like, technology founder, like, pardon me, you know, Steve Jobs, I think his kids didn't have screen time until they were 4 or 5 years old.
Right.
We know that their brains aren't really wired to handle this. So this is not me trying to be a Luddite. This is me having understanding of neuroscience and psychology and recognizing this type of technology doesn't mesh well with a young developing brain.
Right. And that's why I asked, though, because it doesn't seem like you're completely avoiding it either. In some parts of life, it is necessary, just like that family connection.
But, yeah, just kind of model. I don't do this perfectly. But I try, like, there's times he comes to me and says, "Dad, a phone in pocket." I'm like, "Thank you for reminding me." And I will, I'll thank him for that, because I've removed all social media other than Facebook Messenger off of my phone. Just that's for communication. But other than that, I've removed all social media off of my phone. So I don't keep games on my phone, because otherwise I could just get too caught up in wanting to scroll and things like that. And so I try to be conscious of how he sees me interact with my phone around him.
Definitely.
And I think that's important as well, to show him that I'm there to be present with him and pay attention to him. And sometimes maybe I'm just reading a book or something like that and letting him play independently. So he doesn't feel like he always has to have our attention, but letting him know that I'm there and I'm present.
Definitely. No, I think that that's huge, but I think that a big thing as a society we're going to have to do is start reeling back our screen time on our kids.
I think TikTok is super toxic for the brain. It's the worst one of the bunch.
I wanted to talk about that specifically, so I might as well bring it up now. So TikTok is one of those that, well, I'm doing testing. I'm doing testing on pushing our content out on all platforms.
Yeah, for sure.
And so at this point, TikTok is the only one where it seems like there is an underlying tone of like toxicity. There doesn't seem to be any real search for truth or answers with the comments or the questions posed on our posts. Whereas on other platforms, it seems that derogatory comments have been either avoided or have been very calm and tame. TikTok, there, like I said, there's no real seeming underlying cause to agree to disagree or to find any solution in the middle. It's all just disparaging comments. I'm curious what you've seen, because your podcast isn't so much like mine, where it has a picky title
polarizing. I think mine is generally speaking inspiring for human beings. So for those who might not know, my podcast is Between the Before and After, and we explore people's life stories of overcoming adversity. And so there's an element of storytelling that most people can find some common ground in. And we generally, I'm not opposed to polarizing topics, but we generally don't go in that direction, because we're just exploring, right. You know, but in the case of what you're describing here, and like, I don't use TikTok. I think I had a TikTok account back in 2019. And then I hopped on once again in like 2021 for maybe like less than a week, because I'd had an influence, a guy on who I really well respect, and he built up a following of like 600,000 plus on TikTok. And I was like, oh, okay. So it's like the platform to get on if you want to grow. But one of the things started happening, like the first thing it shows me is like women doing like essentially softcore porn.
Well, like, yeah, repeatedly. That's insidiously through it. And if you're a male, you're going to get sent that content.
Yeah. And so I was like, look, I got a male brain, and I recognize that my, like, a certain part of my male brain is drawn to this, but I also recognize that this isn't healthy and I don't actually want to see this. It's like junk food, right? I know that junk food isn't healthy. A part of me wants to eat it because it gives me a dopamine hit in my brain. But the I guess thinking part of my brain goes, yeah, this is not good, even for the health of my marriage, for example. So I was like, oh boy, I got to take a step back from this, because it's just pushing this content into my feed. And even if I try not to interact, they're watching like, do I pause? Do I scroll? What do I do? And so, but I really think TikTok is damaging, and it's not just TikTok. We pick on them, particularly because of the connection to the Chinese Communist Party. And it's very clear that they're CCP spyware. And I believe they're using it as a tool to collect dirt on different people and stuff for future generations. Like it's, and pattern behaviors and things, but I don't want to pretend that, like, you know, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all these other platforms aren't doing the same thing.
It's the same exact thing in their own way. Right.
Right. It just feels like TikTok is more insidious because, say, something like the CCP or the Chinese Communist Party is more blatantly authoritarian and insidious than what we see in this version of quote unquote democracy in our part of the world. So I know I've diverged a little bit, but I think TikTok is not a great place to be. I have been tempted to get a burner phone to put TikTok on there specifically and only use it for that purpose, where I would literally send files to like a separate drive and stuff like that. So I'd try to create a disconnect between TikTok and the rest of my digital world, because I could grow followers from my podcast, but I can't be bothered.
Right. Yeah. Like that's where we're at. It's like a crossroads because making decisions like that, like it's obviously an audience that you're missing out on, but is it the audience that you want or is it worth your while? It's very odd to me because I've been getting very, very positive feedback on almost every other platform at
Yeah.
this
Well, the
point.
funny thing is, in the professional work that I do, so I'm a nutrition coach and a board certified health and wellness coach, and the majority of my clientele are females over 50, and they're not that likely to be found on TikTok, truthfully. And so I don't feel like I'm missing. My podcast isn't directly connected to my work. There is some parallels to it, the work that I do, but it's not directly connected, and so I don't feel like I'm missing out on too much there.
Right, yeah, and it's I think that TikTok itself and maybe these reels and shorts and these specifically short content styles, although intelligent people are going to watch them, I don't think that they grab the attention per se of the people that are going to either dive in or listen or even engage with a show like yours or mine on a deeper level. Not sure that it's really targeting the right people because of that.
Yeah, it seems like there's a need for a little bit more intellectual maturity, and I feel as though like reels and shorts don't necessarily foster that, because it fosters a type of consumption that, again, from a brain's perspective, is not very healthy.
Right.
Pardon me, it's very, very engaging, and it can really draw you in because it's showing you highlight after highlight after highlight. But even thinking about how that shapes our perception of reality can be really troubling, because it can do it in a subconscious way. Even if I'm like consciously aware that this is somehow affecting my perception of reality, that affectation is still happening.
Exactly. Yeah. It starts to put a lens over your whole eyesight. And what we've found, it's just better to mechanize it the way that you're doing it is the same way that we're trying to do it. You know, keep it off of your phones, but keep it on a computer or something like that where you can actually share files. But yeah, constantly putting it in front of your own face is you're kind of asking for it, I think, at this point. It's pretty obvious what these companies have put themselves to be or what they want to push.
Well, something that's kind of fascinating since the last time we've talked is I've got a preliminary diagnosis of having ADHD, and I was completely unaware that this was something that could exist in adulthood, because as a child, because I had my idea of what ADHD looked like a hyperactive kid, and I wasn't necessarily that kid. And not only that, ADHD kids or people with ADHD typically have difficulty learning, but because of a very good memory, I think it really masked that. So it was just like, oh, he's very quick thinking and he just gets bored easily. It wasn't really, and because I didn't really exhibit sort of the out of control hyperactivity, it was never identified. But then I look at like my history. I've had like 11 different jobs and careers and professions over the last 20 years. And I use that term because I only count the things that I spent at least 6 months in as like a job or a profession. And I've done it over 11 times before eventually just becoming an entrepreneur, because I was like, clearly I don't work well in the employee type setting. It just doesn't work for me. And so I had to start my own business. But yeah, that kind of awareness really surprised me. Now, why I bring that up is because with ADHD, I have a tendency towards addiction-like behavior, and I'm aware of this. And it's not a comfortable thing to think about, that I have this brain that tends towards addiction-like behavior, because I wish it wasn't like that in many regards. So I recognize that I have to be conscious of my food consumption, because I can get really pulled into junk food. At one point, I went through trauma, PTSD, binge eating, became morbidly obese, and so on. I get pulled into video games, and I can play, because these things that give relentless dopamine highs really draw my brain in.
Right, and
And
I'm
so something
very
like,
smart. Yeah, I can definitely connect with you there. Yeah.
so something like reels, even with my conscious awareness, it's like the other part of my brain will overwhelm the conscious thinking part of it and
Because
say,
it's consuming what it wants.
keep consuming this. So in moments of clarity, I realize I have to put these fairly firm boundaries in place. Otherwise, I'm going to go down this path that really isn't healthy for me. And I've been down that path before. It's kind of like a path of self-destruction.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. And you could just really start to stumble down the hill that way and start to gain momentum quickly.
I try to think about how I spend my time. And a lot of times we have this like passing time, killing time, wasting time, these sorts of expressions around it. And what I try to remind myself of is, what am I spending my time consuming? And while I'm doing that, what is that taking me away from, or what is that taking away from me? So am I spending time consuming something instead of being with my son or with my wife, for example?
Exactly. Yep. Easy trade for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk a little bit of current event with you because this is just so happened to bother me over here in New Jersey. What's going on with all these freaking smoke plumes coming down here, man? Can you have any idea what's going on?
We have like a lot of empty land filled with trees in Canada, a lot of empty space just covered in trees. Forest fires are, it's a seasonal thing. Every year we have them. It's just a matter of how severe it's going to be. So it's just, we know it's coming every year. How early will it start? Well, if we didn't get as much snow this year, there isn't as big a spring runoff. The ground, the water table is a bit lower. It's going to come sooner.
Right.
But what because we live in sort of generational cycles and we have a very short attention span nowadays, we don't recognize that forest fires are actually part of a natural, healthy forest cycle, but it moves in like decades. The forest as an ecosystem is unaware of, you know, our desire to harvest it for raw materials and things like that. But one of the examples I give is there's a particular pine tree whose cone can only be open in the heat of a forest fire. So it needs like a couple thousand degrees centigrade or Celsius to open the cone and disperse its seed. And once a fire has moved through the area, it has like cleaned up a lot of the junk and the dead stuff and turned it into really nutrient-rich charcoal and soil, which is very fertile ground for new growth. And so it's actually like, if we tried to eliminate forest fires altogether, that would be problematic because it's a natural part of the healthy forest cycle. And without it, we get proliferation of things like the pine beetle that has been destroying a lot of our trees because of sort of preventing the natural forest cycle, because we grow these to harvest it as raw materials.
Right. Right. And then so you can easily make a connection out to what they do in California, where they've neglected to do controlled burning for a long time. Yeah. And now you have lots of hot spots of constant fires. So that's what
it's in Australia as well.
So is what's going on in Canada at this moment or this past week? Is that anything that's like out of the ordinary, or was it really just a pretty, you know, just a cleanup fire that ended up sweeping winds around?
Almost. Yeah, I think it's probably a little bit more severe than average. I mean, the last time it was probably this severe would be about 2017 or 2018. I'm trying to remember. We had, I don't know if you heard of the town Fort McMurray, but it made like the global sort of news cycle. Mm. It's a city of about 300,000 people, but it's a very isolated city. It's like 7 hours north of the next major city. And it's up in what we call the oil patch. And it exists primarily because of oil extraction in that region of our province. Right. But it's surrounded by forest for hundreds of miles in all directions. And so it got surrounded by fire. And so basically it was like this town was surrounded by hell, because not only do you have these fires burning, you have this thick smoke overhead, and which makes the air unsafe to breathe, but the fire is consuming all of the oxygen. So you have that as a problem as well. Now you try to drive a vehicle in this to escape, and people are like driving down this highway with like walls of flames on either side of them. The engines are getting choked with the smoke and the lack of oxygen and things like that. Like it was a horrifying thing to watch. So this kind of pales in comparison. It's in relatively minor, I would say. Like, it's still bigger than average, but for us, we're like, it could have been started by an idiot who flicked a cigarette, could have been started by a lightning strike. It's kind of hard to know at this point.
Right. And it turned pretty big, so you're not going to trace it back.
No, not at this point.
That's pretty interesting, because I was in the thinking that more than likely this happens more often than we think. It just so happened to swirl our direction, and everybody in New York City is making a big stink at it.
Yeah, because you're not the first to ask. I mean, I was chatting with a lady yesterday who I host on my podcast, and she was asking about it. And so it's funny that the smoke's like made its way down to you, because we think about like weather patterns and the cycle and the movement of it. So this air was over us like a couple of weeks ago, where the air quality index, I think normal or good, is something like 20. I forget what the exact scale is.
Anywhere under 50 is pretty healthy, I think.
Yeah. So we were 17 times above normal at one point.
Okay. Yeah. So you're right around the same spot. So you were probably at like 200 to 400, somewhere in there.
Yeah. We got up to like 387 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like
that was our worst night.
Yeah.
That was the worst.
We just shut everything up. We've got an indoor air filter. You know, I think it's again a common appliance for people to have here because of the forest fire situation. We just know, hey, shut up the doors and whatever. Right. Don't spend a lot of time outside if you don't need to. Run the air filter to clean the air. Kind of sucks for my little boy who likes to play outside. It's kind of fascinating to look at the sky and see it like yellow when the sun's coming up and things like that. But yeah.
Yep. And I think that's what shocked everybody here. But yeah, it was craziness. Like, we canceled our baseball games over here. We went crazy. It was definitely a wild time. But I had a feeling that this is something that should be happening, not necessarily happening more normally, but should be aware to the public that this happened.
Well, I think there's the temptation to always be on the lookout for a conspiracy theory.
Right.
And I'm like maybe sometimes a conspiracy theorist. I like examining and trying to understand human behavior. So, yeah. But I want to be careful of, like, not everything is like an insidious government conspiracy to destroy us. Sometimes it's just life happens. You know, an earthquake happens in Turkey. So was it a secret, you know, weapon that caused the tectonic plates to rattle and drive an earthquake? Or was it just that was a region prone to earthquakes?
Right.
You know, was this a government arsonist who, you know, or saboteur who started a forest fire? Or was this a lightning strike that just happened in nature? That kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't necessarily know if I thought there was a conspiracy to it, but was it grand, more grand than normal? It just seemed, it seemed like too opportune of a moment for people to try to take advantage. And you know, you're going to get the global warming.
Yeah.
This is the end of the world. This is the apocalypse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think, isn't that Imagine Dragons, a line in Imagine Dragons songs? This is the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. People want to talk about it like that. When it was minus 51 here, minus 51 Celsius, which I don't know what that'd be, minus 60 Fahrenheit. Or, like, I was really concerned about global warming, I tell you.
It's cold.
Yeah, like your face freezes in 30 seconds. Like your eyes will freeze shut, your nose will freeze, your lips will freeze together. Like, it's just boom, like that. I was really concerned about global warming in that moment. And when the snow finally melted at the end of April after 7 months, I was like, oh boy, this global warming has really got a grip on us.
Yeah, and up here we had a really warm winter. We had not much snow, so yeah, it happens all the time. We're actually in a pretty severe drought, I would say, at this point in New Jersey. It's pretty interesting. Haven't received much snowfall or rainfall this year at all.
Yeah, but I think there's historical weather patterns that operate on time scales we are like we as human beings really don't understand. Like, so. And the other thing is warming entirely bad? This, like, there's the joke that, like, all the rich people are buying all this waterfront property. They're clearly worried about the rising sea levels, right? Like, all the ones that are sort of talking to us about this. And so I do like the idea of being a responsible environmental steward, like not wantonly destroying our environment unnecessarily.
Right.
But I think just like anything that maybe starts with like a good intent, there's the ability for those in positions of power to start to use this to try to hijack the situation and use it as a tool of control. And it really shouldn't come as any surprise to us because this is something that's been happening throughout human history, right? In previous generations, it was using some form of religious fervor to do this when military might couldn't necessarily accomplish it. And so it's just that now it's more readily enabled through digital technology that's advancing at a pace that we can barely keep up with. In fact, we can't keep up with.
Yeah, it's impossible to keep up with. And now with AI, good luck.
Funny thing about AI, though, AI is dumber than we think, which is reassuring.
Well, I'm very curious as to what your experience with it so far is, because to me, it's just an upgraded Google if you know how to use it. And if you don't know how to use it, you're going to throw it in the garbage in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I play around with ChatGPT because you're right. I look at it as a really I want to say intelligent search engine, but it's still being given parameters by human beings. It
you
knows how
easily to hit them. You can easily hit them too.
Yeah, and so you it's good at making an answer and speaking it confidently as though it's right and that it sounds right, but it can be entirely incorrect. And so it still requires like human intervention, but so there is this idea: can we create, you know, artificial sentience and things like that? And I'm not so certain that we can. It's just that we now exist in the time of a level of computing power that was previously unfathomable that allows these programs to crunch immense volumes of data far beyond what we can do as human beings, right. And it can actually do some of the heavy lifting for us. But then there's the other side of it: who's writing the controls in and around AI, because we're seeing AI produce answers that are probably more left-leaning politically. And both you and I have a conservative slant to our political views, sure. Which I think is fair to say. And so I look at it I'm less worried about some sort of global supercomputer becoming sentient and wiping out humans as a parasite. than I am people utilizing technology as just another means of control and sort of enslaving people.
Right. And what I'm seeing now is there's so much being flooded into the market by way of just ads and creatives and everything that's leaning left, and not just left, but progressively farther left. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have more than half of a country that believes that you have no business in questioning whether someone wants a sex change operation, and even if they're less than 18 years old, I should never question it. When half of your country or more believes that, something went wrong, I think, because mm-hmm. That's a very, very controversial point, I would think, even to make in a leftist mm-hmm. circle. But I think that the manipulation of the emotional argument has led so many more people than expected to that side.
And I would counter half the country as a number yet. I would say you're going in that direction because of the indoctrination of young minds.
I should clarify, it seems like half the country.
Right, right.
It's wow. More so probably, I would say, less than 30% even. But overwhelming feeling that everybody's against you.
Right. So, for example, I, to some degree, self-censor on social media, and I do it with awareness. Now, I do this because it presents a risk to my business at this point in time because of where it is, and there's still some degree of reliance on social media. And if I was to be, you know, canceled, it would hurt my business. I have some contracts that, again, if I was to post something that they felt went against their values, they would say, you're welcome to your values, but we're going to cancel the contract because it doesn't line up with ours. So I'm in the grips of some degree of censorship, even, and I'm keenly aware of it. It doesn't change my views that I might express. And maybe on a platform like this, I feel like it's more open because how many people are going to hunt down a podcast with me on it? Maybe. Whereas, you know, posting something on social media that someone can screen grab and it can be quickly consumed. But what's fascinating, I have a client who is a psychologist, been a psychologist for 40 plus years. The roles are reversed because I'm working with her. But what's really fun is because I also have a background in psychology, I can work with her and she knows exactly the tools that I'm using, but still recognizes that there's value in it and so on. But I said, hey, can we flip the script for a minute? And I asked her if I can get her explanation or her thoughts or understanding, because she actually specializes in the field of multiple personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. It's fascinating. My first question, of course, was like, are you ever scared when someone like switches personalities? She's like, no. Mm-hmm. It's not like people portray it. And there's a whole, and there's a whole, going back to the TikTok thing, there's a whole toxic trend of people pretending they have multiple personality disorder and they can, I'm going to switch and roll my eyes back. It's like, it doesn't happen like that in real life.
Right.
They're clearly faking it, but they're driving people to think that they have this. And there's a whole conversation to be had around social contagion in particular, but
I think that's a conversation for another day, my friend.
I think we could go for an hour
on that.
But so I just asked her thoughts on like transgenderism as it's being kind of forced on children. And she feels that it's extremely unethical, but I said, and I agree with her. I think it's extremely unethical. And weird, just before coming on the show, I was kind of pondering this idea because I've heard the phrase like transgenderism is a cult, and I'm differentiating transgenderism from the LG and B part, and maybe even the Q part. I don't know. The T itself is kind of this uniquely strange
whole acronym confuses me at this point.
Right, right. We affectionately, without a trace of malice, call it the alphabet community. And to be fair, you know, when I ran a physical bricks and mortar business, I didn't fly flags or anything like that. But I was known in that community as a safe space, and because I permitted yoga for that community to be hosted there. That allowed me some insight into that community. And I don't believe in mistreating people for wherever they're at in life.
Absolutely.
I don't agree with some of their philosophies and things like that. And they would say some things that I would disagree with, but I just never bothered to challenge them because there's no point in getting into an ideological battle. But they trusted me enough to share with me some things that I found fascinating. Every one of them has an issue with their mental health. But they said, we are afraid to talk about this publicly because what's going to happen is they're going to turn this narrative on us and say it's mental illness. I'm like, but it is. The problem is the stigma connected to mental illness. So going back to my conversation with the psychologist here, we talked about how very often in the case of transgenderism, one of two things is happening. Either they're gay or there's a multiple personality disorder in play here. Now we go, how does this stuff get propagated? Right. Well, now, if you have a parent who has some sort of personality disorder, there's an over 90% chance that personality disorder is going to be passed on to children, not just one child, but all of the children. And so she was explaining, like, if you have this sense, it seems like there's a growing, what would I say, that there's an increasing amount of like mental illness around this area. It's not your imagination. It's being propagated because of how it gets propagated. You know, there's so many different reasons, like the idea of multiple personality disorder is a very fascinating one. There still is like a base personality, like who an individual is. And again, it's not always as clearly defined as like I'm an entirely different person, but it's like taking on different personalities. So she said she feels that there's an element of that within this community. But also it's like, why did we get away from this idea that if you don't feel like, how do we get to this place where it's like, you don't feel at home in your body? Quick, let's chop off perfectly healthy tissue and scar you for the rest of your life and medicalize you and pharmaceuticalize you, which I don't know if that's actually a word, but I just made it up.
It works. It's explainable.
Right. In the name of profit, how did we get to that place? Because we're being force fed something. Like you said, you have the impression that at least half the country is in support of this. Right. I believe it's less than 10% of the country, but most people are afraid to speak up because they hold that same impression, because those who hold the levers of media are using this again, maybe a tool to divide, to control. And I don't necessarily think there's one grand conspiracy. I just think there's multiple ways that human beings who have sociopathic or psychopathic tendencies often rise to positions of power and look at different ways to leverage that. There's another interesting thought. I'll just throw one more out there. And that is that rich people get bored. Rich people get bored, and rich people leverage the power, go, hey, why don't we create a way to like indulge in sexual perversion? Well, why do we engage in sexual perversion? Well, look what happened even in the Roman Empire, right? As they became more wealthy and more powerful, those who held positions of power, they would just hold these ridiculous orgies and feasts and things like that. Like they would just engage in the most gluttonous behavior, whether it's sexually gluttonous or gluttonous with food, because they're essentially going crazy because they're stuck in, you know, they have all of this power and it's like, well, what's the point of life? I have to pursue something more extreme. And so what if people in these positions who have a megaphone, a voice, and influence, they can steer the public narrative to some degree, are indulging in some form of enjoyment over this sort of sexual perversion that's being played out in society. So there's many different factors that could be a part of it. I don't want to claim to have like an actual answer of why this is happening. I just have a lot of thoughts around it that I want to consider.
I think you brought up many great points though, because it really starts the conversation on it, and it breaches into a conversation that I love to have. This is a social contagion, really. Yes. And something I think I definitely want to save. I think that would be a good topic to revisit, maybe on a bonus show where we could dive a little deep on the topic.
Absolutely, for sure.
But regardless, I think it plays a great role though, because social contagion can really bleed out into not just issues like this or something as, I guess, controversial, but social contagion can also be spread in the most minute and disguisable ways. It could be something as simple as laziness, something as simple as not being kind to your neighbor, and promoting these poor values, which I think are starting to seep through our society. I think this is where the social contagion part is not being paid attention to enough, because so many people treat their peers and their neighbors at this point in a country like America, where you're built on your neighbors and you're built on the trust and the commerce of your neighbors and your town executives that are within anywhere you live, you're putting a lot of trust. It seems like that distrust has been sown so deeply into our media, into our advertisements, into our pharmaceuticals, into every way of life. And I'm curious if you see that from the outside looking in, from where you're living at this point.
Yeah, and to be fair, I recognize I live in quite a bubble to some degree, not even like a COVID bubble, but just a bubble in general, because I work from home. I live in a relatively small city where people, and in Canada, it is ingrained in our culture to be kind.
Yeah.
But I do see where sometimes these ideas get weaponized a little bit, and we see the intolerance of tolerance,
Yes, that's exactly what I was calling out. It escaped my mind, the wordage, but yes.
You know, this idea of inclusivity, it's like inclusivity of what? Diversity of what? Well, are we allowed diversity of thought? I go back to, so during the pandemic, for example, I had a contract with a particular care provider. So I was doing some contract counseling for their clients. And one of their clients was being forced to take the jab. And it was either that or lose a job. And she was terrified of this because she really didn't want to get it, but she was coerced into getting it. And so I tried to remain neutral in the conversation with her because we were still working just from a more health and nutrition perspective. But I empathized with her. Well, it turns out she went and got the jab because she was not in a position to give up her job.
Yeah.
Financially, she couldn't. It would put her in a really desperate position. And then she turned around and went back to the contract provider and told them all about the conversation that we had had. And I received a severe reprimand, not a cancellation of the contract, but a warning. If you engage in a conversation like this again, we have to terminate the contract. You're welcome to your views, but you're not allowed to communicate those views with the clientele.
Really?
Yeah. So what's fascinating about this experience was here we had somebody who was absolutely terrified, did not want to get this forced medical intervention. And I recognize, and I didn't get it either. I'm like, no way in heck. Like I'm an OG. I got the original COVID. Why would I need a vaccine for something I've already had? Yeah. But because at that point, this is a couple of years back, this is around 2021, you know, everything was like, the countries were so gripped with this fear of it. In order for her to make peace with the fact that she had to have this forced medical intervention, which ironically is a little bit like medical rape. You're having something forced into your body against your will.
It sounds like you could make many connections. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But in order for her to kind of make peace with that, she had to turn me into the villain, like the outlet for her, the anger and the cognitive dissonance that she was experiencing because something happened against her will, to try to shift her belief that this was a good thing that happened to her. And I was the evil person that was trying to dissuade her from doing this very good thing that was very necessary to help keep her safe. And it was super interesting to watch that happen. And that's just one example of who knows how many people were faced with this kind of decision and had to enter into this level of cognitive dissonance in order to make peace with what was being forced upon them.
Yeah. And the people you alienate, it's hard to look at people who, you know, at some point felt a certain way about certain things and they continue on a different route than expected. They're no longer as cordial with you per se. It happens often. And I don't think you need to be a psychologist in any regard to realize that. You just need to pay attention a little bit.
It has definitely surprised me, and people have surprised me. People who I've been friends with for many years, seeing this massive shift in their worldview. Now, to be fair, I think as we mature as human beings, like, I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago.
Right.
But, and probably 20 years ago, like at one point I voted for the Green Party because, because I was naive and didn't understand. And I thought, hey, I want to do good for this world that we live in. I want a better world and so on. And there is some good in like having a green party. In Canada, we have, you know, multiple political parties. We're not quite entirely bipartisan, but we have two strong parties and a few fringe parties that have some degree of political notoriety. I wouldn't vote for them again. Like my values are more conservative. And I believe that that occurs as we get older. It's not just an old people phenomenon, but we start to recognize that there's something about conservative values that are really good. Socialist ideas sound so good when you're young and don't have an understanding of many different things. And it comes from a good place for a lot of people. But when you start to watch the reality of it play out, you go, oh, this isn't actually a great idea. It's good on paper until you bring human beings into this. And it doesn't work.
Right. And I think this is going to be right where I end it, John, because I'll end it on this question. So how do you feel about the fact that, well, this is just the way that my mind works. I never made that connection because I never thought that socialism could ever work. Being from a two-family business household, from constantly being put in a position to earn my own way in the world, socialism or anything of the sort never seemed to be a viable option. So is that a bad way to approach life when you, or a bad way to approach it mentally when you've never really even dived into those? Because the older I get, the more reinforced my values get, because I see how dark it could get.
I mean, I think you're nearly a geriatric at this point in time. So
that's in my mentally. Yes.
Yeah.
I am about 65 to 80 years old.
Right. Right. Well, I do think it's healthy to explore the opposite to the views that we hold.
Right.
A lot of people are afraid to do this.
I try to put that in front of my face, but it doesn't make me ever change my way of thinking. It reinforces it and teaches me new ways to argue. That's the only thing I've ever learned.
And that's not a bad thing. It's when we're afraid to subject our personal views to scrutiny, there's a reason for that. And that's because our sense of identity is deeply tied into the beliefs that we hold about ourselves and how the world operates. And so any threat to that feels like a threat to our very sense of identity. And it's why people who are bought into an ideology often turn violent, is because you're threatening their very sense of being and potentially in their mind, their life, by threatening a belief that they hold to be true, whether or not it's factually accurate. And so I try to exercise critical thinking, and I try to subject my views to scrutiny, and very often they hold up, and sometimes I do change my mind. But I find that, as you know, and I do believe that capitalism is not perfect. I believe there, you know, when you have five companies that are piling up all the money, we have a problem. And so it's, so what does that make me? I don't know. Socially liberal, fiscally conservative. I don't know. Somewhere I'm politically, I'm kind of politically homeless.
We're in the middle.
Right. So I would just say this: don't be afraid to subject your views to scrutiny, because if the thing that you are looking for is to try to understand the truth of the matter versus hold on to an ideological view to make you feel safe, you're going to come out of it wiser and stronger and with firmer beliefs as a result.
I could not agree more. Yeah, I hope that affects people in a certain way, because there's nothing more satisfying in my mind than having a hunch about something, going and doing your research and finding more about your hunch. Maybe it was right, maybe it was wrong, like you said, but doing your research, engaging in conversation with people who might know more than you, there's nothing more satisfying than gaining that level of knowledge if you're willing to go there.
Yeah. If you're secure enough. And so it comes to, you know, what are the steps you need to take to become secure with the actual insecurity of life? There's no guarantees other than death. Like they say, death and taxes. I've tried to evade, not evade them. I should be careful what I say. But I mean, I've managed to avoid paying taxes by losing a whole bunch of money in a previous business venture. There's a way around it. Just lose a whole bunch of money and you don't have to pay taxes for a while. But it's like, make peace with the reality of life, that we're mortal beings with this level of insecurity that we live with every day and it hangs over our head. And that's why I go back to, you know, why do I love spending time with my toddler every day? It just reminds me to be present and savor these beautiful moments in life. And that's how I keep sane in a world that seems like it's going crazy.
Yep. Well, in a world that keeps going crazy, John, you are one of the people I know I can go to and have a decent conversation. Like I said, I'll be reaching out soon. I think we got to do a bonus episode and dive a little deeper. I know specifically, I have a few topics written down that I think need to be broached a little bit more with a, I'll say a stick of dynamite. So
yeah,
we'll go for that. Other than that, John, I hope you stay well. I hope your wife stays very healthy, and I hope the delivery goes well. Catch up to you sometime before then, because I know you got chaos after.
Oh, look, man, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully for everybody listening that you've enjoyed this sort of weaving, winding conversation, you're kind of getting a sense into how my brain works. It goes down 8 different tracks at once. But hopefully you take something of value away from it. I always love my chats with you, Sal. Thanks again.
Absolutely, John. I hope you have a great rest of your day again, and be well. Stop sending smoke our way, will you?
Will do.
All these bitches say, damn. I wish I were the fucking state. I wanna be something, not nothing. Trapped inside my dream and I'm running. Running away from these demons. But the feeling's so good, I'ma keep dreaming.